Okay, so tomorrow there's going to be a makeup class. This would be a class, this is a makeup class because next Tuesday I won't be in town. I might well have something on Tuesday. I know that's an optional one, like maybe if we can think of some useful thing that you can do, I'll let you know. But the expectation is that I won't be here. I'll be recording the class for Tuesday tomorrow, and I hope some of you will show up because I hate talking to walls. Although sometimes when you're sleeping, I feel that way, but but you know, I really don't like walls. This is where, unfortunately, everything is booked up, so we wind up meeting in this conference room in the Decision Theater. Decision Theater is this building right across, you know, except to enter it, you have to basically cross by sandwiches, make a right, and then come in. That's where the front door is. Okay. So I hope, how many of you think that you might be able to show tomorrow? Okay, good. So anyway, that's where it is, and it's the same time, 10:30 to 11:45. As I said, those of you who cannot make it, I will make the notes and audio available at the minimum, and I will try to actually make a video available if I can, okay? Some low-quality video, at least. Okay, that's basically it, and it'll just be continuation of today's class, you know, so there is no new topic. It's basically wherever we left off today, I'll start tomorrow. Okay, the other thing is regarding the projects. The last project is, the third project or the fourth project you did? Fourth one. So what I am thinking, because, you know, basically we do have one homework coming up that I will give out. Come on, you did all this stuff. Don't you want to do the homework? Show more enthusiasm. And I really think the enthusiasm would be even higher if there's also a project, especially for this guy. What I would do is the following. Most likely, there won't be an extra project. Instead, you are welcome to improve on any of your projects, okay, and give the improved project for regrade. That includes this one, okay. Those of you who couldn't complete it on time, essentially, you know, until the end of the semester, which is basically the week after next, right? Week after next. So you can use this time to improve any of the projects. For those of you who did well, you know, do something else. For those of you who didn't, you know, you can try to improve your project. That's the last class of the semester. Whatever is the last class. I believe it's May 5th. May 5th? Yeah. So that's what I would wind up, I think that's what we'll do, okay? But the homework will still be, I'll give the homework out, and the way that homework, that would also be due on the last day of the class, okay? Basically start getting, you know, cracking on the homework, because that will also already have the markodation processes, planning, as well as game, in adversarial games, game search, which we'll be talking tomorrow, I guess, or towards the end of today. And then we'll have some stuff about learning. But, you know, that homework would be due, that last homework would be due on the last class. Okay? Any questions?
Can you maintain the homework as well? I mean, because our exams are there after the...
What do you mean, which homework are they? What do you mean?
Yeah,
I'll put it up today. Okay. It'll be also having the learning questions and everything, but you know, you just do them when you get there. Okay. Any other questions? Are there any questions? Okay. So I'm going to continue where we left off. I guess at least some of you should be wondering, why did I have that there? I could potentially be trying to get a pot shot at the campus Republicans, but that's not the reason, okay? Why is this related at all to markodation processes? Why is this quote attributed to Winston Churchill related to markodation processes that we discussed? you have to see everything in everything. That's when you understand stuff. Okay. So if you are learning marketization processes, you should see them everywhere. And so why is this relevant? Because he is telling you what your optimal policy should be. If you are 20 and you are not a liberal, apparently you are heartless. And assuming that being heartless is not a good thing, then your optimal policy is to be a liberal if you are 20. Okay? But apparently, once you become 60, right, your optimal policy then changes to be, so if you still continue to be a liberal, then at that point you become mindless, right, assuming that there's only liberal and conservative. The important point here is optimal policy depends on your age, not on the state in which you are in. If you are 20, you know, if this could have been saying if you are rich and you are not liberal, and if you are poor and you are not conservative. Those are states of being, right? Age is a different issue altogether, right? This basically is telling you that what you your optimal policy could depend upon how long you have left before you croak. Is this the first time you heard about this? No. In fact, optimal policies do depend upon time to death. Okay? So I lied last class. Last class I said a marketization process has an optimal policy, a single optimal policy. When will you have a single optimal policy? Since we are talking about, you know, pleasing things like death, when will you have a single optimal policy? What? If you never, don't ever die. If you live infinite years, then it doesn't really matter how many years you have lived. You still have infinitely long to go. Okay, so marketization processes that we talked about last class essentially correspond to what, I mean, the view that we talked about last class correspond to what's called infinite horizon. Infinite horizon marketization processes. And any other thing is finite horizon. Now what's interesting, what is interesting is that the finite horizon marketization processes, the policy for a finite horizon marketization process is more complicated than one for infinite horizon marketization process. Because the policy for an infinite horizon marketization process is just, you know, a pie is a mapping from state to action. Whereas this pi is a mapping from state and time to death to action. Assuming time is discrete, let's say, then if you can live, you know, 1,000 epochs, then you need 1,000 optimal policies. One, when you have 1,000 years left to go, second, you have 999 years left to go, and so on. Do you understand that? Okay, so it's in a way actually finite horizon is more complicated than infinite horizon. Maybe you figured this out already that, you know, in fact half of our problems are because we'll die one day. But, you know, I think so you have to change what you have to do based on how long you're going to be around. Okay, and if you are into, for example, financial planning, they say, you know, I think there is an equivalent version of this. For I think Henry Ford has said that if you are 20 or 30, you should not have a bank account. Okay, you should not save at all. You should invest all the money you have, which you don't any, in yourself, right? Whereas if you are my age, you should put all your money in the under the pillow, okay? Because you're not going to. There's no point in investing in yourself. You want to save. Okay, so financial planners tell you this too, that depending upon how you think you're going to stop working, you should either put your money in stocks or bonds or whatever. And all of this could be Greek and Latin for those of you who haven't yet made any money. But that, you know, believe me, you will hear about it. Okay, so the whole point, of course, is that policies can be horizon dependent. Okay, so this is basically just repeating what I said. That in fact a policy does depend upon how much time you have left. Okay, but to make our life simple, we'll basically focus on infinite horizon mark correlation processes in our discussion. Okay? But it's not that hard to understand how these things extend to finite horizon. Okay? Here's an interesting thing. Ask yourself the following question. If you are in a finite horizon mark correlation process, right, you can live for 10 epochs. So you would need S with 10, S with 9, S with 8, and so on, and S with 1, right? So if you are in a state and you have one unit of time left to go, what you do? Which policy do you think is the easiest to compute? One. But that's not the thing you will do now, because hopefully you still have more time to live. But planning always progresses in the backward way. If you have only 1 year left to do, one more second left, what are you going to do? And then you figure that out and then say, if I have 2 more seconds left to go, what do I do? And so on. Okay, so in fact, the way you will compute this is that way. For the infinite horizon case, essentially, in fact, it turns out that these are related. These policies, the policy for if you have 2 more seconds left to go is related to the policy for you have 1 more second left to go. And for the infinite horizon case, the policy for infinite minus 1 second left to go is related to infinite minus 2 seconds left to go, but those are the same policies. And so the policy can be connected to itself in a recursive way, which you keep in your mind, and that we'll get back to it, because that's how we solve this problem. Okay. So let's go back to this slide that we discussed last time, which basically was, here is a mark correlation process, and we are trying to compute the optimal policy for it. That's our interest. Okay. We already talked last class that the optimal policy depends upon, reward structure and also the action dynamics. We talked about this last time, right? So now I want to compute optimal policy and how to go about computing it. And let's first understand, at least at some level, what does it mean to have an optimal policy? Okay? So the idea is the following thing. If you are given a policy, you should be able to compute its value. Okay? If you want to figure out optimal, then an optimal of something, okay, some kind of an entity, take the entity, convert it into a number. Okay, and then if you have 10 copies of them, you have 10 numbers, whichever is the best number, you pick that entity. That's the usual idea, right? So the idea would be, how do I convert my policy, which looks like this, arrows looking in various directions, into a number? Right? And here is the intuition. What you would do is you would simulate the policy. Okay, you will simulate the policy, and essentially what a simulation means. So you start from the start state, do what the start test, start, you have a given policy. Okay, so in this case, you start from the start state, and let's say it says say go up, you go up. Now, since the action is probabilistic, you might actually go up or go this side or go this side. You're simulating that too. You're actually tossing coin. And then you'll find yourself in a new state. You simulate again what you're supposed to do according to that policy. Okay, you keep doing this for a while. So you get a sequence of states that you have visited. Now, for the sequence of states that you went through, each state gave you a reward. It could be zero, it could be negative, it could be positive. Right? What you want to do is you take the cumulative reward that you got by going through all the states. This is the number that you got for this one simulation. Do it again. You'll get one more number. Do it again. You'll get one more number. Do it 10,000 times. You get 10,000 numbers. Take the average. That is the expected value of this policy. If you start from this state. Do you understand what I'm saying? So if I'm starting from this state, the expected value of this policy really is, you have all these sequences of states, and I, you know, you exhibit sequence of state, you add up, you know, I haven't exactly told you how to combine the rewards of the states. You probably are thinking the more obvious one, which is if I get two units here, 3 units here, minus 4 units here, I'll add them all up, which is a reasonable intuition, although I'll question it in a second. Okay? But, so you add up, you know, so you somehow combine the rewards for the states, get the cumulative reward for the state sequence, that would be the bonus, that would be the utility you got for one simulation. And you do that simulation multiple times, get multiple behavior traces, get the value of each of the behavior traces, take the average, that's the expected value of that policy. Okay? Did you get this all right? So what's the problem now? What are the two problems? Two problems, of course, are problem one, actually, is how long should each behavior trace be? How long should each behavior trace be? Right, you're simulating, when do you stop? Okay, let's look at that. Can it actually be? So one idea is you decide up front that each behavior trace will be only 100 long at most. There's an upper bound. Why at most? Because after about 4 actions, you may fall into this state. At that point, there is nothing you can do. It's premature death. Okay? So what you are saying when I said 100 is, no normal human being is expected to live past 100, maybe 110. Okay? So I'll just put 110 as my horizon. Can I die before it? Of course I can die before it. But I would not live beyond 110 anyway. So my horizon is 110. Okay? So if I'm looking for optimal policies that are for finite horizon, then you use the horizon itself to decide the behavior trace length. And that would be the upper bound. It could be lower than that because you might actually fall into one of the sink states. If there are no sink states, the horizon is needed. Otherwise, you'll never stop. The other idea, basically, is let it be as long as it wants. Let it be arbitrarily long. Now, you could luck out, and so basically once in a while you'll fall into minus 1 or plus 1. If your policy happens to be proper, a proper policy has non-zero probability of going eventually into a sink state. Do you understand that? Okay, let's go back to this picture. Which of these policies are not proper policies? This guy doesn't want to die one way or other. Doesn't want to go to heaven, doesn't want to go to hell. Right? This is an improper policy. That's why, you know, your priests and your pastors and your whatever don't like these kinds of people. Because they don't want to go to heaven, they don't want to go to hell, they just want to have fun. Right? And that's improper. Right? And for improper policies, if you try saying no length restriction, then essentially you will get infinitely long behavior traces. For any proper policy, eventually, the probability is non-zero that you will eventually reach a sink state. So just because I didn't have an horizon bound doesn't mean that my length would be infinitely long. If my policy happens to be a proper policy, if the one that I happen to be evaluating happens to be a proper policy, then I will still be getting finite length behavioral traces. Some are longer than others. If not, then in general, I can get infinitely long behavior traces. Okay? Now, the second question I have is, how do I combine, I'll write it that side. How do I combine the utilities of a state sequence? of a state sequence. By the way, I said state sequence, I also said behavior trace. They are basically synonyms. Your behavior trace is the sequence of states that you go through. Okay, how do I combine them? Clearly, I have S0 to SK. Each of these have RF0 to RFK, which are the immediate rewards that you get just to get into that state. So I need a utility for this whole thing, which is some function of this. I can define this function in many ways. Okay, but you know, one obvious thing that you would have liked to do, to plus, right? That's what you would have liked to do. Okay, now what happens if you do plus? Is there a problem with that and that? Because you could have improper policies. When you have improper policies, then you have infinitely long behavior traces, and it doesn't matter how little is the reward of each state. If you have infinitely long trace, you will get an infinity as the utility. So it's degeneracy. You would basically not get any. All policies would look equally good. They all give you infinite value. Do you understand what I'm saying? Okay. So you need some way of getting out of that problem. As long as behavior traces are guaranteed to be finite, and that would happen in two cases. One where the horizon is there, when there's a finite horizon. Another where the policy that you are actually trying to evaluate happens to be a proper policy. In both those cases, you would have finite sequence, I mean finite traces, finite length traces. And so you can add up numbers and you'll still get finite numbers. You can compare finite numbers. Infinities you can't compare, which basically means everybody would be just as bad as everybody else or as good as everybody else. So now there's a technical problem if you want to allow infinitely long sequences. What do you do? What you do is, have you ever thought of an infinite sequence which has a finite summation? Yeah? You took AGRE, GRE, SAT, all those fun things, right? So if you have a geometric series such that the ratio is strictly less than 1, then the geometric series is guaranteed to sum to a finite value, right? Okay. So I actually have a non-geometric series right now. Basically, I have this RS0 plus RS1 plus etc. RS infinity. Okay, I can make it a geometric series by taking a gamma less than or equal to 1 and say gamma power 0, RS0, gamma power 1, RS1, gamma power 2, RS2, and then this is gamma power, you know, this is K, RSK. Now this is guaranteed to be finite. As long as the rewards, essentially as long as the rewards are finite, no state has infinite reward, this is guaranteed to be finite. You see why? Because if you think that the maximum reward is R star, okay, you take R star out here and you divide by R star everywhere. So you know that this whole thing is less than 1. Each one of the terms is less than 1. So this thing will be less than or equal to R star, which is the let's call it R max, because that's what it is. R max times 1 by 1 minus gamma. It would be less than or equal to that. Right? Okay, so what did I do now? did I do anything that has any intuition, or I just created a mathematical problem and found a solution to it? What I am doing here is I am taking rewards which are k steps away and I am discounting them. I am saying $10,000 10,000 years from now is not equal to $10,000 now. Are you surprised? No. That's exactly how you think about the world. You know, if I tell you, should I give you like a candy today or like three candies next year? Right? I mean, if you're at all into candies, you'd say, give me now. You know, I don't even want to hear anything about later. Then I might die before that. Okay? So you discount, you intuitively discount future rewards. Okay? So it better be the case that you're really making a huge amount of money later on for you to, you know, not get the small rewards. Now, of course, different people have different gammas. So let's talk about this whole discussion on marketization processes is very well related to real world, you know, and so you can make millions of examples. So let's have, assume that for all practical purposes, you think you really live for infinite number of years. So you have two kids. One kid wants to drop out of the high school because they can see that they can already make money in McDonald's by flipping burgers. It's like $10 per hour, okay? And, you know, these kids' parents and teachers keep telling, you know, you keep working and if the economy is surviving, you might actually get as much as $10,000, you know, per month. Right? Two kids are told the same thing. One kid decides to drop out, one doesn't. How do their gammas compare, assuming that they are using this model? The kid who is dropping out, what is their gamma value? What? Zero, basically. They say, give me now. I don't know how long I'm going to live. By the way, you know, discounted reward model, I'm not actually being purely facetious. Social scientists have used discounted reward models to explain why there is as much violence in certain areas as there is. When people think they really have zero probability of living to see their next birthday, they want to get whatever money they can get like today. Do you understand what I'm saying? Okay? So I didn't want to get into beautiful social science, but there is your connection. Okay? So the high school dropout essentially, for whatever reason, has a gamma which is very low. And the PhD student, right? There are a couple of them. They have gamma close to one. Right? You know, why do I need to make money? You know, I will make like $1 billion on my 110th birthday. And that will take care of everything. And I'm so happy that there are PhD students, believe me. But, you know, there is a connection that how do you discount future rewards with respect to the current reward? And so even though I did something that looked like a mathematical, you know, sleight of hand, which is just throw in gamma power, you know, throw in a gamma which is less than 1 and keep, you know, increasing it, its exponent, it can be made sense of in this idea that you discount future rewards with respect to present rewards. Okay? So this is basically these next two slides. I'll skip through them because I just explained them on the board. Okay, this one is telling you how long should the reward, how long should the policy be, trace be, and then this slide, which I'll come back to the previous slide in a minute. This slide basically tells you that if in fact it can be infinitely large, then you can always use discounted reward model. To essentially make it sum to one. Okay, now of course it turns out that there is no real reason why I must have a function that sums the rewards of each state. It depends on what you want to optimize. Okay, somebody else might want to optimize average reward per year. How much per, you know, epoch, how much reward are you getting? Average reward would have no problems whether you have infinite sequences or finite sequences. Okay, so you could actually have theory of average reward Markov addition processes. They're more painful to handle, so we won't talk about them. Okay, but we will talk about, you know, this one, which basically assumes that if you go through a whole bunch of sequences, your overall reward is really a total function of the sum of these rewards. Okay, so now let's go back to evaluating a policy, because this slide is really, you know, a kind of a formal version of this part. Because I told you how to evaluate a policy, right? Which is generate behavior tree sequences, find out their value, take the average. That's the value of the policy, right? I'm doing this basically given that we have done on the board. We can say that first you define a utility of a sequence of states in terms of their rewards. And there is a question as to how to do it, but under certain reasonable assumptions, if you assume stationarity of preferences, that means if you prefer future F1 to future F2 starting tomorrow, then you should prefer F1 to F2 starting today also. So you don't change your preferences just because the timing changed. Okay, it's an important assumption, but it's a reasonable assumption. Assuming that, then it turns out there are really only two reasonable ways of combining utilities. One is by a simple sum, the other is by discounted sum. But I mentioned both of them. And you would use this if, you know, you have to use this if you can have infinitely long sequences. Okay? Now, and then if you have this, as I said, the maximum for this sum would be bounded from above by R max by 1 minus gamma. That's what I just showed there. R max being the highest reward you can ever get in any state in your world. Okay. Now, the step two is the utility of a policy pi is the expected utility of the behaviors exhibited by an agent following it. That's what we want to say. Okay. Now, in fact, this is slightly more general than what I said previously. I previously essentially focused on the start state. If you start from the start state and start behaving, okay, and then you take the average of all the behavior traces, I mean, average of the cumulative reward you got over all those behavior traces, then you can use that to compare policies. That's not very general, because what if sometimes you start from here? Sometimes you start from some other state. So what I really want is, it doesn't matter where I start from. I start from a point in my world and live for a while. I mean, simulate living for a while. See the average, the cumulative reward I get. Okay? And then I essentially average this out over all the sequences that I ever did, you know. Every time, pick a state, simulate, get a total utility. Okay? A special case of that is always pick the same state. If you always pick the same state, this exact idea that we are doing winds up giving what's called the value of that state with respect to the policy. We'll get to that in a minute. But right now, you can also just talk about general value of a policy irrespective of which state you start from. Okay? And then, of course, this is where, so utility of a policy is expected utility. You know what is expected value of a random variable, right? So if a random variable takes a bunch of values with different probabilities, you essentially multiply probability that it takes value 1 times the value 1's value plus and so on. That's expected utility. And a normal average basically assumes that all values are taken with the same probability. Okay, so this basically is saying what we said, which is with respect to this pi, live for a while, get a trace, simulate living for a while, get a trace, compute its total value for that trace by using this summation, and then take the expectation over it. That means do this for a whole bunch of time and then take the average. This is the number with respect to each policy. Okay? And then the optimal policy then is the one that maximizes this expected value. Okay? Okay? Yes? It doesn't have to, actually. In fact, the way I wrote it, I am starting from the same state. But in general, if you're looking for the value of a policy, you can start from any different state. And if there is a probability distribution that you will start from different states at different times, that will still give you an expected value. Okay. Now, if you happen to be interested in evaluating two policies, knowing which start state you start from, then you would just always start that race from there. Okay? Now, I claim at this point that I have given you a computational method for finding optimal policies. It's probably a dumb way, but it's a way. Okay? Because there are, after all, only a finite number of policies. If there's a number of actions and there are S number of states, then only A power S policies exist. And you can compute this number for each of the policies and pick the policy which has the biggest this number, and you're done. So you, for the first time, you have an idea of how to get these kinds of things by just pure number crunching. Okay? Stop me if you're having questions. Okay? So now, what I would do is, I will go from here, so keep this in mind. What I'm going to try to do is get an actually a much better approach for computing the optimal policy without having to do it this way. But you have to understand this. Think of this as getting derivatives by taking the limit of fx plus h minus fx by h tending to 0. Okay? If everything else fails, you can always do this. You probably can never really do this. It's just too painful. But there's a way you can connect, you can set a bunch of equations which can basically short circuit this process and get you the optimal policy step. Yes, sir?
Could you once again please make the connection between the assumption in the step one and...
No, this I cannot, it's out of the scope for now. Just basically this, you kind of already agree that these things make sense for you. But that's because you all sort of have this assumption that if you really think that a particular kind of future would be better than another particular kind of future, if I ask you tomorrow, then you would say the same thing today. Your preferences don't change. That's all it says. Stationarity of preferences. Okay. So now, one interesting thing is that, in fact, this other comment that we kept getting. If we start each of these traces from the same exact state, then the value I am getting for the policy is also the expected value this policy will give me for this state. So in a way, this, if I always start my sequence from the state S, okay, from the state S0 equal to S. Okay, so this is the same as here, except not only are you just simulating the policy, but the first state is always S, a particular state that you have in mind. So if you start always from that state and do a bunch of simulation, but with respect to this policy, it's not random, okay? It's a biased random, where you are told what you are supposed to do in each state. You're told what you're supposed to do in each state, but when you do it, what happens is random. Do you understand what I'm saying? So, for example, here, if you are in this state, you must go this way. But when you try to go this way, you might go this way with 0.8 probability, try to go this way with 0.1, in which case you'll stay here, and go this way in 0.1, in which case you'll again stay here. And more interestingly, if you do it, for example, from here, if you go from here, if it told you go up, right, then if you did this up with 0.8 probability, you'll actually get there. 0.1 you'll get here, 0.1 you'll get here. The policy is deterministic. The policy is deterministic. The outcome is non-deterministic because the actions are stochastic. Who now has started wondering why not consider non-deterministic policies? Has anybody thought about this? You think you had enough of non-determinism already, right? So here's it's a beautiful connection. I'm telling you all about optimal policies, but I'm only thinking in the space of deterministic policies, right? What is a non-deterministic policy? It says when you come here with probability 0.3, do action A1. Probability 0.7, do action A2. And then A1 has a random outcome, A2 has a random outcome, maybe. If they're deterministic, they won't have any random outcomes. Have you ever in your life used non-deterministic policies? How many of you have played rock, scissors, paper? Right? Try using a deterministic policy for rock, scissors, paper. In fact, there's a beautiful Simpsons episode where Bart and Lisa are trying to settle an argument, right? And then Bart says, let's do rock and scissors to settle the argument. And then there's a cloud on top of Bart's head saying, woo-wee, I get to play rock, scissors, paper. And then Lisa is saying, I'm going to win. That's what he says. And then Lisa is saying, oh, we are going to play rock, scissors, and paper, and Bart always picks the rock. Right? If you know what you're going to pick, you're dead. Do you understand what I'm saying? Deterministic policy goes down the drain, okay, in some cases. And in fact, what I call non-deterministic policy, how many of you know what is a better term for this? These are called mixed strategies. By the way, in game theory, what we are calling policy, in game theory they call them strategies. Okay? And in essence, what I'm saying is that really the space of policies, you can't just think in terms of pure policies, of pure strategies. You have to consider mixed strategies too. And one of the interesting things is if you are talking about single agent Markov decision processes, there's a theorem which says that if there is an optimal policy for this MDP, there will always be an optimal pure policy for the MDP. Such a theorem cannot be true for multi-agent scenarios, right? Because if that is true, then you get to play rock, scissors, and paper by always picking rock. And then you'll never win anything. Okay, you have to keep that uncertainty. I might do this or I might not do this. And I have some probability distribution in my mind. Okay, so it's beautiful connections between MDPs and game theory because it's all connected. We will get to games, tomorrow's class. But, as I'm talking here, part of the thing that you have to have in mind is, again, even though I won't prove it and the textbook doesn't prove it, you should be wondering, why are you only looking at pure policies? Well, because it's enough to just look at pure policies. You can still have mixed policy, and in fact, you can use mixed strategy and compute these things with respect to that. Because then, instead of just saying, what does the action say in that, when you go to a particular state, the policy says what you're supposed to do. Currently, it says, do this action, okay? In the mixed strategy, it says first pick toss a coin, and whatever it says, do that action. And then when you do the action, if you are a stochastic action, you have to toss a coin again to see what's going to happen to the world. If you are actually executing this, then you only get to toss one coin. Nature tosses the other coin. Do you get the difference? Simulation versus execution. In simulation, if you have a mixed strategy, Bart gets to decide with, toss a coin and say, I'll pick rock or scissors. Okay, then what happens on top of that in the real world depends on what the opponent does. Or basically, you can think nature as the big opponent. So nature tosses the other coin. So there are two uncertainties, but one is under your control, one is under somebody else's control. Okay, but going back here, you can use, starting from this state and doing, you know, policy guided exploration of the states, you know, states to get a behavior trace and take the average value of that sequence, that you can call that essentially as the expected value you can get by starting from that state and following this policy. Expected value you can get by starting from the state and following this policy. So now I am making a new idea called utility for a state with respect to a policy. Okay? The utility for a state with respect to a policy essentially is computed again in terms of these traces. And now, you know, remember that I got here by saying I will let you do this without actually doing this. Instead, I'm sort of developing more terminology. But don't lose hope, because this guy requires this on this side. Okay, whatever else we want requires the same kind of thing on this side, so you can equate them at some point of time without actually having to do infinite sums. That's the trick we'll be doing in a minute, but let's get our intuitions for utilities clear. Okay, a utility for a state with respect to a policy is the value that you get by wandering around using that policy from that state. Now, what's the optimal utility of a state? Optimal utility of a state is starting from the state and asking, what is the best value I can get if I use any of the policies in the world? And I would say it would happen when the policy happens to be optimal. Right? So the optimal utility is related to optimal policy. And they are the yin and yang. Optimal utility of a state, the maximal utility of a state is what you get if you start from that state and use maximal policy, best policy from then onwards. You know, it may or may not make you wonder, and how many of you are worried that the value of a state depends not just on that state, but from there doing the best possible thing forever onwards? I'm saying the value of a state depends not just on that state, but starting from that state and from then onwards for the rest of your life doing the optimal thing. That is how the value of the state is defined. If you are not, okay, so let me get back to this in a minute, but if you're not clear on that, so this is basically saying optimal utility depends on optimal policy. Okay, I just made up this example. I just got this example. There are many, many examples that can make this point to you. Okay, but I like this today. I'll show you this. So one time I went to in Darjeeling, which is a hill station in India. There's a place called Tiger Hill, which is a little hill ridge. Everybody goes there in the morning. So when I went there, I did also go there. And then there's huge throngs of people, and you know, it's, the sun hasn't come up yet. And then everybody is looking at the sun coming up. And so I also was looking at the sun coming up. I liked the sun coming up. It was fun. But, you know, I've been living in Arizona for long enough time. I have seen sun coming up, sun going down. You know, we get beautiful sunrises, sunsets. I couldn't understand why the heck are all these people so crazily looking at the sun. And at some point of time, I looked the other side from the sun. And that's what I see. Okay? That's the reason people go there. Because if you stand on Tiger Hill, which is a little hill here, right, you can look this side, which is one action you can do, and get to see a sunset, which is a sunrise, which is kind of okay, or do the other action and get to see this. Okay, now I could have gone to Tiger Hill and have just seen the sunrise for a while and gotten bored and got back into my car and come home and say, I don't understand why people keep saying Tiger Hill is so good. It has no real value. Well, it has no real value because I didn't do optimal action starting from that state. Same thing can be said for, I don't understand why people think going to grad school is any good. I went to grad school, I slept very well for 6 years and nothing great happened to me. Right? Our undergraduate school. A state allows you the ability to reach a higher level, but assuming you start doing optimal actions from then onwards. It's just a facilitator. Okay? Again, something that you kind of intuitively understand, but when you hear that the value of the state somehow depends on the optimal policy, somehow depends on you doing the optimal thing after that onwards, you might be confused, but it's very much right. Because you can be in White House, I mean, we have decided Obama doesn't get a degree, because it's true he got into the White House, but he could screw up from now onwards. Right? So maybe we are right. Maybe we should wait. Or maybe we are not. Maybe, you know, that's enough for you. But either way, the what you do from there, I mean, Bush did get to White House, and some people think that he hasn't really reached the optimal potential because of the policies he used after that. Okay? So that's all fun. So I would say really that the optimal utility is nothing but the utility that you get with the optimal policy. And I'll actually call that just U of S. Normal use, I call them U of pi of S, that's utility with respect to your policy. And just the plain and simple utility of a state is what the best people can do from there. I think it's a reasonable thing to do it. For example, I don't have to say, oh, Tiger Hill could be good, could not be, you know, maybe good, may not be good, depending on what you do. And so, you know, tourist brochures should not say anything about Tiger Hill. But they write about Tiger Hill because if you do go there, they expect you to do the optimal thing, in which case you'll have a lot of fun. Okay. Okay. So, given this, and given our previous equation about how policies value is being computed, it turns out that there is a direct relation between optimal policy and the utility of a state. Okay? And that's what this is. Basically, if I give you the optimal utility of each state, somehow. Okay, and actually let me give you the example. I'll come back to that slide again. But here, remember this picture? Okay? It turns out that this is the optimal value numbers for each of these states. They're numbers. Okay? This says 0.912, this is 0.660, this is 0.705. What they are saying is, if you start from this state and do the optimal thing from now onwards, the total value you would accrue is 0.70. Expected value you accrue would be 0.705. If you are here and do the optimal thing, you get 0.912. If you're here and you do the right thing, you can get 0.660. Notice that if you're here and do the wrong thing, you get -1. Right? Right? I mean, you know, you're walking on the ridge and you can fall off the ridge. And then you say, I don't want to do that. You know, and why did people say this ridge is good? You know, I just fell off and I broke my leg. That's because you don't know how to walk. Okay? But if you know how to walk and you cross this and go here, you do get a great value. That's why the value, optimal value of this is 0.660, even though in its neighborhood is a really bad monster, -1 sitting there. Just because a monster is there, you don't have to go and put your head into its head, in its mouth. You have free will. The free will is to avoid the monster. And if your brain doesn't work, you will do the opposite. Okay? And the whole MDP thing is using your brain to compute the policy. Yes. One is lower than 1.3 because part of it is, no, it's higher. 1.1 is this.
That one above.
Oh, this one.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, yeah, because and as you are going through, you get a little ding. Every time you go through a state and you haven't reached the goal state, I'll give you a -0.04. It's a little ding. And similarly, why is this lower than this? Because this guy has a non-trivial probability of falling into this. Whereas this guy can take this out and can avoid that. It's just beautiful. I mean, you know, you can look at this and, you know, make sense of all your intuitions about how you avoid huge, big, I mean, you know, failure possibilities and still get to the top. And, you know, if you are any of you are mountaineers, climbers, and heard about, you know, getting on to Everest, right before Everest is this thing called, I think, Hillary's Step. I mean, I haven't seen it, by the way. I mean, I haven't gone anywhere close to Everest. But I've read about it, and Hillary Stapp is the place where everybody falls off, other than Hillary. Okay, and but you know, you can say, I've come all the way here, looks slippery, let's go back, right? Then you will never get on top of Everest. Okay, fine. So now, if I give you these numbers somehow, you know, I have a rich uncle who gave me these numbers. It's interesting that I said rich uncle. Okay, there's only one other time I said rich uncle, and there is a connection. Okay, but I'll let you figure this out in the background while I continue with this thread of, if I give you these numbers, can you then tell me what should be the optimal policy? Yes, because you are here, let's say, you are in this state. You can either go up, which is one action, go down, go this way, go this way. For each action, you can compute its expected value. Okay, let's consider the going up action. Let's consider the going up action. Okay, if you went up from this state, right, you go up with 0.8 probability, and then you would be blessed with 0.91 to happiness. But with 0.1 probability, you'd go here, and you will be blessed with -1 unhappiness. With another 0.1 probability, you will stay here, and you will just be happy with your 0.660. Right? I got a number for this. This is a number for going up. I can compute the same number for going down, same number for going sideways, left and going right. Take the one which gives the biggest number. That's the action I'm supposed to do. It turns out that this will be the highest number. So if I gave you this, you know how to get this. Right? Okay? So, what I would say is essentially that first thing is this, actually, let me see this, which is, that the optimal policy, if you're given the optimal value function, the utility function, optimal policy is essentially doing the action from that state which has the highest expected value, where you take into account the optimal values of all the neighbors, where neighbors are determined in terms of where you can go to by your action. Okay? Very simple conversion. This one, if you ever get optimal value, you got optimal policy. Okay? Now, the other interesting thing is that this one gives me the optimal policy. The other interesting thing is that in the steady state, I would argue that your value depends on your neighbor's values. How many of you have heard that when my neighbor's house is on fire, I should get my horses ready? Right? Your value depends on your neighbor's values. Okay, you can avoid them. So this guy is okay because he can do something to get away from this, but he would have been happier if there was no -1 here. So really, I would say that the value of a state is related to the values of its neighbors in terms of the optimal action it can do. Okay? And that's what this one says. Value of a state can be written as the reward of being in that state, of course, plus you could have done any action that you from that state. If you did action A1, you would have gotten into different states with different probabilities. You can compute the expected value of doing action A1, going up, let's say. Then you can also compute the expected value of going down, expected value of going sideways, etc. You take max over all those actions. Whatever is the action that gives the maximum number, add this to the reward, that must be this itself. How many of you have understood that? If you are in a state, essentially, you're already getting the reward for being in that state, and what else you get depends on which action will take you where and how much do you get there. And if all of them also already have figured out what is the maximum value they can get if you live from there optimally, then all you need to know is which action takes you to the best neighbor set with the highest probability. This is called the Bellman equation, and this is your savior. Because this equation basically tells you that you can actually compute U of S by just solving a set of simultaneous equations. And once you compute U of S, you can compute pi star of S, which is the optimal value, optimal policy. Okay? So, this is the example. So basically, so what we are showing here is Bellman equation in action. Okay? So if I am trying to, U of a state is R of that state plus, you know, if you have a discount factor, then gamma times maximum expected value you can get by any action you do from there. Okay? So for U of 1, 1, in this example, I will get this equation. You can write this equation yourself. U of 1, 1 equal to R of 1, 1, which is every state has minus 0.04 as the value, plus gamma times, okay, max of, let's say if you do up with 0.8 probability, you'll go to 1, 2. So 0.8 times U of 1, 2, which is a variable still. You need that number too, plus 0.1 times U of 2, 1, or 0.9 times U of 1, 1 plus 0.1 times U of 1, 2, or 0.9 times U of 1, 1 plus 0.1 times U of 2, 1, or 0.8 times U of 2, 1 plus 0.1 times U of 1, 2. So you should be able to write it yourself. Make sure you understood this. So I have n equations where, actually I have S equations. S is the number of states with S unknown. I can solve the equation. What stops me? What? Max. We can always solve simultaneous equations. This guy is the bad guy. If this wasn't there, it's just a sequence of linear equations. Simultaneous linear equations, for a computer scientist, that's just simple. You know, for a middle school kid, that's pretty bad. But a computer scientist is just simple. You know, it's polynomial time, you can solve it. Gauss-Jordan elimination. Okay, it's the max, that's the bad guy. Which, by the way, tells me that if I, when would I not have max? If I know what action I'm supposed to be doing. So if I am computing the utility with respect to a given policy, then it would be a sequence of linear equations. That would be easy to solve. That step is called policy evaluation. So given a single policy, you're trying to compute its value, which is something we were trying to do, let's see where. Here. I can do it without this infinite summation. I can just solve a sequence of linear equations and I'll get the policy values. Okay? But unfortunately, what I'm doing right now is not just computing the policy's value, but computing the optimal value, which is with respect to all possible policies. And that needs that max. Okay? That makes the problem hard, but it's not too hard, it turns out. One way we can solve this is to convert this equality into an assignment and do it iteratively. So upfront, go ahead and set values for each of the, each of the values to be any number you feel like. It doesn't really matter. You know, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, or 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Or, in fact, a reasonable thing to do is set the initial value to be the reward itself. Okay? So I would basically write U0, so U subscript 0, because U subscript 0 of S is R of S. And then I will use this equation to reset my value by looking at my neighbors. And then again we look at my neighbors and reset our values. And then we keep doing this until neither me nor my neighbors are changing anymore. In which case we'll say we are all happy. That would be the optimal value. Okay? That's called value iteration. In fact, I will talk about this now, but as soon as you go home, try this, which is a demo for value iteration in action, and you will see how values just very quickly converge. This is, by the way, how spreadsheets work most of the time. Okay? If you have nonlinear equations, under certain conditions, you can convert the equations into assignments and can show that, I mean, there is a proof that this will converge to the actual optimal value, which I won't give you. But since somebody has already proved, you don't need to understand it. Of course, you should, but in undergraduate class, maybe you don't have to. And you can be happily using the equation as an assignment statement. And doing assignment isn't costly, because all you are doing essentially is taking these guys already have values from the previous iteration. You know, you compute each of these numbers, you get numbers, you take max of them, and then add it to this number, you will get the new value for the utility. Okay? And you keep doing this until the utilities don't change across the states. So in essence, what you can say is there is a utility vector. There is a utility vector, okay, which is u of s0 blah 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 to u of sn. It's originally set to just their RF values, reward values, and then it's being updated. And then between two iterations, you can compare these two vectors, and if they haven't changed, then you can stop. Now you can talk about how to compare vectors. You can say, take the maximal difference between the vectors along any dimension, because there will always be the equal number of, you know, these are all of these are n-dimensional vectors. Take, you know, here they may be equal, here they may be equal, here there are two, you know, the difference is 2, here the difference is 4, and that's everything else is 0. So the 4 would be the difference between these two vectors. Drive that down. And say, when the maximal difference between two vectors, between two iterations, has become less than some epsilon, I'll stop. Then I can say that whatever are the values, those are the optimal values for the state. And if I know the optimal values, you know how to get the optimal policy, right? Because we just did that already. That's it. And it's a value iteration can be written in a couple of lines of code. And if you had to do that other one, the infinite equations, that would have taken a longer time. Okay, I mean, no, you can write it in a couple of lines of code, but it will take forever to execute. Okay, so the last thing I want to do before you leave today is to show you, as the value iteration, you know, since this is a small enough set of states, there are only how many states? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 states. I showed the values of some of those states. Okay? In fact, you'll notice that 4, 3 is always 1, because it was a sync state. It's the neighbor which closes its windows. So even if the neighbor's home is on fire, they don't care. Right? And similarly, this guy is another sync state. So they have always been in their optimal values from the beginning to the end of eternity. It's the other guys who have to change their values to be consistent with their neighbor. And then you can see that all of these, for example, a particular thing, 1, 1, it comes down and then starts going up and then stabilizes. Okay? And some of them pretty much right away go up and stabilize. Can you tell why some of them are coming down before going up while others are going up right away? Does it make sense given what we are doing? How does the value iteration process, you know, intuitively, how do these guys figure out what their real values are? The guys who are close to the guys who know what they are doing will know what they are doing. And because they know what they are doing, the other guys know what they are doing, and so on. Okay? In the beginning, Spark looks around, realizes that I'm a loser, I have -0.04 as my value, but so are my neighbors. They are also -0.04 as my neighbors. So I'm not only a loser, if start from here and I do optimal thing, I'll be a bigger loser. Okay? So for a while it keeps thinking my value is actually lower than what my current value is. The guys here on the other hand realize, hey, I have a plus one, I have a rich neighbor. So if I play my cards right, I can break into their home. Right? And so they will start getting their values to be the correct value faster. And slowly the time, as time goes on, these other guys, the good news travels to this guy. That it's not as bad after all. You know, it's true that I'm living in a rundown neighborhood, but if I come to the end of the street and make a turn, I get to Bill Gates' house. I can break into that. Right? So I should be, I know that I need to walk for a while, but I'm not as bad as I thought I was. So I will, things start slowly looking up. That's exactly what happened. If you look at how things are going down and going up, that's exactly that. Farther guys, it takes the message to come for longer. Okay. The other interesting thing is, those of you who ever thought about page rank computation, I know some of you have done, it's very related to page rank computation. These are basically iterative computations. And just there, just like there, in fact, the ideas came from here, to page rank. And the way I made it sound, everybody does synchronous updates. So first, everybody looks to their neighbors, updates themselves to iteration 2. Then everybody looks at their neighbors, updates themselves to iteration 3. It turns out it's not at all important that things be done synchronously. It's not even important that everybody should update every time. As long as everybody eventually updates themselves infinitely often, it doesn't matter the order in which the updates are made. So you could actually start updating such, and in fact one obvious consequence of that is that then you can, you know, in the same iteration, in the first iteration, let these guys become, let's say, get their better values. Then these guys can use their current better values rather than their previous values. So already good news has traveled, so I might as well use it. I don't have to wait until tomorrow. That's called asynchronous update. And then you can also do prioritized sweeping, which is update some guys more often and then other guys much less often. And these ways you can improve the efficiency of value iteration. Tomorrow, what we'll do is we'll go from value iteration to policy iteration, which basically points out that the number of value vectors, since a value is a real valued vector, how many value vectors are there? Infinitely many. Searching for the optimal one in that can't be any easier than searching for the optimal policy when there are only finitely many optimal policies. And in fact, you have seen that in the end of last class, that for large swaths of reward vector, policy remains the same, even though for all of the specific reward values, value vector would change. Okay? So there is another idea called policy iteration, which directly searches in the space of policy. And it uses the policy evaluation step, which is a set of linear equations. We'll talk about that, and we'll somehow connect MDPs to deterministic search and adversarial search. And then you will be confused for the weekend. Okay? Thanks.